We're doing something a little bit different this week. We're talking about a future classic, The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, with two fantastic guests, CJ Chris Johnson of the Player One Podcast and JJ Justin Epperson of 8-4 Play. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode because it was only 3 years ago that this game came out, but I think we're going to continue to love it more and more as the years go on. And it was just so great to be able to talk about this game once again in depth. And I will say, you know, if you haven't played this game yet, you might want to go and play it and then come and listen to this. But if you have played Link Between Worlds, maybe this will also give you the fuel to go back and check it out some more. So I will give you a heads up. There is a little bit of background noise on JJ's side. Family having some fun around the house. I did my best to clean that up. And Toma, like I said in the show, just really wanted to play some games. And you cannot fault anyone for that. So I hope you guys enjoy this show. Enjoy all the great music stitched in throughout. And I hope you guys have a fantastic finish to 2016 and a great start to 2017. And again, you know, just to be thankful, you guys, the Patreon supporters, mean so much, and I'm going to be doing some great things in 2017, and it's going to be really based off of the support of people at patreon.com/backmyplay. Again, thank you so much to everyone that supports this show, that tunes in every single week, that submits reviews, and for all you out there that just send me messages that love retro video games. And let's just continue to love these games that are just so special to all of us. Let's get to it. Welcome back to Back in My Play. This is episode number 93, and first off, happy holidays. And what better way to celebrate the holidays than with an incredible discussion amongst friends with our favorite adventurer, Link, from The Legend of Zelda, Link Between Worlds. We are talking about a future classic today. So don't yell at me. I know this isn't an old game, but it kind of sort of is because it's somewhat a sequel to an old game, but we'll get into all that. Let me introduce our panel for this episode. First, coming back on from the Player One Podcast, enjoying what I would assume to still be hot Lana, that is CJ Chris Johnson of the Player One Podcast.
Hey, how's it going, Kevin? It's cold Lanta here.
Did you guys get your half an inch of snow that shut down your city yet?
Not yet. Not yet, but it is slightly chilly. I mean, it's in like the 40s. So that's cold for Atlanta.
That is brisk. And speaking of, I don't know, being cold, but really not, I guess you're just on the other side of the planet. We got JJ Justin Epperson back on the show from, of course, 8-4 Play and 8-4 Limited. JJ, how are you?
I'm doing great. You know, it's funny because yesterday Tokyo was like 70 degrees. It was like spring over here.
What?
And then we just had like torrential downpour overnight. It was crazy. As someone who's from Memphis, I can attest to the quarter inch of snow shutting down the whole city. When snow happens, we just all freak out. I mean, it's similar in Tokyo, to be honest, but
Well, that's the way it is. You got to, I think that's kind of a good thing to just shut everything down. If there's snow out, let's just stay inside, guys, and let's play video games. Totally.
Video games, yeah.
Again, like I said, we got a very interesting game to talk about. And, you know, to preface all this stuff, we will be having a little bit of a different format for this show and really just having a discussion about this. We're not going to really break the game down piece by piece like we might with an older game, because potentially this could also encourage some people out there to pick up a 3DS, pick up a 2DS, pick up something that is capable of playing this game and going through it for the first time. And, you know, our other somewhat major goal for this episode is to, and CJ, don't flip out. We're going to try to convince JJ to play through A Link to the Past. So,
all right. Although I will say I revisited Link to the Past fairly recently, and after playing Link Between Worlds, I didn't like the controls.
Yeah, it's, I mean, those old SNES controllers are also, you know, they can be, or I'm guessing you're playing it on 3DS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, we'll get into all that, but two other things I want to quickly get off my chest. I did mention a happy holiday. So again, if you're enjoying this during the end of the year, I hope you guys have a great end to 2016, because we could probably all just like take this, you know, last sheet of the year and just rip it off and, you know, throw it in the fireplace based on how it's been going. And just, yeah, seriously, let's celebrate some good games. And also, please stay tuned, because 2017 is going to be a very big year for Back in My Play. I got some interesting plans, but stay tuned for all that. And finally, shout out. It's been a very, like, seismic shift in video games and coverage over the last week with Chris Kohler leaving Wired and now Jeremy Parrish leaving U.S. Gamers, yes. So two of our retro brethren and some of our, I guess, senseis of retro video games are now moving on to bigger and better things. So continue to stay up to date with what they're doing, because they're always doing awesome stuff. So the last thing, this game has an unbelievable soundtrack. So I'm going to take multiple opportunities to put in so much music into this episode that it's going to be roughly 18 hours long, but we're going to take a quick break right now. We're going to start the party with some more music from Link Between Worlds, then we're going to come back with some of the history of this fantastic game. Let's get right into it, and as we mentioned before, this game's not really old. It just passed its third birthday, because it came out November 22nd in North America and Europe in 2013, and then it actually came about a month later in Japan on December 26th, 2013, something that is quite unusual for Japanese-developed video games. And it, JJ, I don't know if you remember the necessarily like the reason is like the day after Christmas, like a big release date for Japanese or games in Japan.
So Japan in general places more importance on New Year's in terms of gift giving than Christmas.
Hmm.
A lot of like toy companies and stuff will be, I mean, they'll release stuff before Christmas, but it will always be just before Christmas. Right. Because they're really shooting for the otoshidama, the New Year's gifts, which are basically in the form of money. And then you get like a whole bunch of money from you get a whole bunch of money from your relatives and stuff. Thank you, Toma. The kids will then use that money to buy gifts, and there will be, if you go to stores and stuff like that, they'll have like special deals or gift bags that include several different games and stuff like that. So a lot of companies target that.
Yeah, and it makes sense coming out, of course, right before Black Friday here in the States of that year to hit, you know, if you're going to be picking up a 3DS, might as well pick up a copy of Link Between Worlds while you're at it.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, yeah, I think you're probably gonna see a lot more games target that sort of frame or time frame than just Christmas here.
Well, this is a game that was very successful. It sold over 2.5 million copies in the first couple months of release, and it is now, at least here in the States, it is now becoming one of those hard to find Nintendo games where, you know, it happened with Ocarina of Time 3D after about a year. That game became hard to find until its re-release. And now you're very hard pressed to find a copy of Link Between Worlds brand new from an online retailer. You might have a little bit more luck at your local brick and mortars, your Targets, your Best Buys, things like that. And of course, you can always get the quote unquote new slash opened copy of Link Between Worlds at your local GameStop. So let's talk a little bit about the development of this game, because, you know, CJ, even before we were started recording, we were talking a little bit about the unbelievable. Again, you know, I still hope we one day get the Nintendo published book of Iwata Asks interviews.
Yes.
But there is an incredible interview from Iwata with the development team of Link Between Worlds that's still available on Nintendo.com. You can literally just go into your favorite, go to AltaVista or Dogpile.com and type in Iwata Asks, and you can get access to all those great interviews. Are still archived up there. But we'll be taking a lot of anecdotes from that as we talk about this, but it does have a very unique history. Of course, it was developed by Nintendo EAD in Japan. The producer was Eiji Aonuma, which he was really very much like on the sidelines for the most part with this game, and basically just checking it out and making sure, like, yo, this is Zelda. But he had, you know, some particular influence, because, you know, the very first game that he ever worked on in the Zelda series was Link to the Past, so it's a very important connection. The director was Hiromasa Shikata, and this is going to be tough because JJ is on the show, and he's going to be able to critique my notoriously terrible Japanese name pronunciation. I'm very happy that most of my business dealings in Japan deal with very easy to pronounce last names like Sakata. And then the composer was Ryu Nagamatsu, and Ryu.
Ryu Nagamatsu.
Come on, Nagamatsu. I'm a big Shenmue fan, and how did I mess up? I should have like that game primed me to say Ryu. But
Ryu, and then it was Shikata Hiromasa. So you did all right on that one.
No, I didn't. Mm-hmm. No, we don't need to sugarcoat this. I know it's the holidays. Everyone's trying to be nice, but it's okay. It's one of those things that, you know, whenever I get my 5-year stay in Japan, that's when I will figure out how to pronounce Japanese names appropriately. Otherwise, I'll be kicked out. So, again, like I mentioned, this game has a very interesting development history. These are anecdotes that we got from that Iwata Ass interview, but This the development of this game started with like a team of three people that were coming off of the Spirit Tracks development team, and this was all the way back in 2009. They were more or less given the task of, guys, you know, throw something together. We got this thing called the Nintendo 3DS. What would you guys like to do? And they ended up putting together a prototype that included the wall merging mechanic, and for, you know, without getting into all the details, you know, there was a prototype that was put together. It was presented, and the concept itself was eventually approved after being turned down a couple times initially. But the game ended up having to be shelved because we, of course, remember this was a big story back in the release of the Nintendo Wii U. But when Nintendo did, like, they learned about HD video games and the size of the teams that are needed to, you know, get these games ready, it was an all hands on deck call, and people from this development team had to go and help finish up the games for the launch of the Nintendo Wii U, which was of course coming out in the fall of 2012. So the team disbanded, the development stopped, and then eventually development was brought back, it was ramped back up, and Kentaro Tominaga, again, I apologize, he was brought on after production began, and the plan, I guess, originally was to create 50 or more small dungeons that would utilize the new wall mechanic, and we do still have some of that in the game with these smaller caves and the ridiculous amount of silver 100 rupees that are out there. But Miyamoto shot it down, criticized this approach, and instead suggested, hey, why don't you guys just make a new game based off of A Link to the Past? That sounds like a pretty good start and foundation to the recipe. So they began the full production of this game back in 2012, and they made sure that they built it off of A Link to the Past. They knew at the time of the upcoming Nintendo 2DS, so they wanted to utilize the 3D capabilities of the Nintendo 3DS, but they still needed to make it playable on the Nintendo 2DS. But they had opportunities to put their own spin on A Link to the Past itself by doing things like, again, using that wall mechanic, allowing you to choose the order in which you approach those dungeons by having the ability to rent items. And you also, again, had the opportunity to remix the potentially one of the best soundtracks of all time from Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, when it came to A Link Between Worlds. So there are a bunch of other things that are in that Iwata Ass interview, but I don't know if we're going to get into to all that stuff. CJ, again, you kind of took a quick look at it earlier today. I don't know if there was anything else that stood out to you besides, you know, again, Miyamoto being super, super hard on like making sure that if we're going to do this, it kind of has to be perfect.
Like a really turbulent planning stage. Like they had the idea for the game so long ago and had to shelve it, and Miyamoto said no a bunch of times. Like it really, it's kind of amazing that we got a finished game out of this.
Yeah, and I think once they ended up getting that development going, like we were able to get a brand new Zelda game in our, you know, a sequel to Link to the Past in about a year, which is super, yeah, super impressive.
And can we say that this is the best portable Zelda?
I think we should save that to the end. We should save that discussion to the end.
Well, I mean, answer's easy.
All right. Before, you know, we don't want people shutting this off if they disagree, so we'll have an organized discussion towards the end. But I think it is a little bit of a bummer. Like, of course, we got this game announced in Nintendo Direct. Like Reggie brought up the whole, you know, I'm sure it's very authentic, but you know, every time people ask me what my favorite Nintendo game is, I always say it's A Link to the Past. That is the game that makes me love Nintendo and love video games. So they presented this as a sequel, and you know, to be honest, when I saw that initial reveal, I was like, what the hell? What the hell are you guys doing? Why are you, like, you're potentially trying to make a sequel to a perfect game, and it seems like it could be a little risky. I don't know, Jay, did you remember seeing that, way back in early 2013?
Yeah.
when they revealed that?
Yes, I do. And, you know, I always watch the Japanese side, so, I can't remember. Sometimes during Nintendo Directs, like, the two regions get desynced, and
right,
some people see things before the others. Mm. And I think this was an occasion where the American side saw this first. And like, I saw it on Twitter. I was like, wait, what?
But it would have been even crazier for you guys, because in your direct, it was actually just called The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past 2.
Yeah. And so like, you know, John and I were freaking out. I mean, it looked amazing, and it's so weird that they announced that during a little Nintendo Direct. This could have been a huge E3 game for the 3DS, but
exactly, like, this is, I mean, if you look at the, I mean, 2013 wasn't a bad year for Nintendo releases. We got some good stuff in there, like we got Super Mario 3D World. Like, it was a pretty solid year for, I think I'm getting that right, for video games. Or no, actually, no, that would have been 2000. No, that would have been 2013, I think. Anyways, that's not what we're here to discuss. But you guys are totally right. Like, that thought of this is just coming out in a Nintendo Direct. This isn't like a gigantic thing. Like, bringing back The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, should be a, like, it should have been the same thing as when all those, you know, Nintendo fans freaked out when they saw, you know, Blades Must Bleed or Blades Will Bleed. Like, that should have been a huge moment for E3, but instead it's like we're all just watching on YouTube and then going to Twitter.
My jaw hit the floor when they announced this thing.
Right. Like,
you could not believe that they were doing this. And it was fantastic. It's like you're going back to what many people consider to be the best Zelda. Certainly a lot of people have nostalgia for the Super Nintendo and Link to the Past. So I thought it was perfect, especially after we had, you know, Spirit Tracks and Phantom Hourglass that were in very different directions. Mm. I thought it was fantastic to have this sort of recentered Zelda on the 3DS. It was great.
But didn't it seem very un-Nintendo to do this, to go back to a game that someone is, like, maybe not so much in the world that we live in with Super Mario Maker. That's a different thing. But, like, if you go and think you guys are just going back to, like, potentially the best Zelda game and making a sequel, why aren't you just doing something completely new?
Well, I think they did have something completely new, right? I mean, it's the wall mechanic. That was, and generally Nintendo likes to build entire games around unique mechanics. And I think this would not have been done if it hadn't been paired with the wall mechanic. There's no way.
Yeah. To me, it's kind of like it's almost like a new Legend of Zelda. You know how, like, they have new Super Mario Brothers? It's kind of like that sort of thing. So it doesn't seem so surprising to me in you know, with regards to today's Nintendo. But, you know, it's one of those things where I always kind of figured that A Link to the Past was like an untouchable, game that they would just, like, leave as is. So it was, I guess, a little surprising that they revisited it. But, you know, I'm definitely glad they did, because they fucking
nailed it. They totally nailed it. Again, this was just me, like, watching this, and it's so weird as we continue to talk about this, you'll be like, it was completely different. But when I saw that initially, I was, like, kind of bummed out. Like, I was not hyped up for this whatsoever, because the Link to the Past, and this, I'm the type of person that's like, I hate people that are like, they're making a sequel to Ghostbusters or something like that. Oh, they're ruining my childhood memories because they're making a new Ghostbusters. Like, no, they're not. You don't have to worry about it whatsoever. But for this is like, A Link to the Past is my game. Like, that is probably my favorite Nintendo game of all time. Like, I busted my ass to try to get a copy of Link to the Past back in the day, and to just see them, like, quote unquote, like, going back to the well or something like that. Like, that's something that I was worried about. I was obviously 100% wrong. But it's kind of fun to go and look back on that now. But before we do go forward, I probably should mention, like, maybe more than anything in regards to this game, the music is incredibly special to me. And the composer did an unbelievable job, using Koji Kondo's work from A Link to the Past and doing new takes on that music and new arrangements, and even adding some new tunes to the game. So that's what you guys are going to be hearing. Nintendo of Japan is always outstanding when it comes to releasing soundtracks of games. It was one of the big things with Club Nintendo out there. And I ended up having to import a copy of this. Luckily, there's some people that somehow are able to get like tons of copies of the Club Nintendo soundtracks out there and sell them on eBay. So if you do want to still get a copy of the soundtrack, it is possible to pick it up on eBay, just import it from Japan, and it is well worth it. A 2-disc set that is probably my favorite video game soundtrack of all time. So we'll be continuing to listen to that throughout the day. So I think what we'll do is, again, selfishly, I want more music in here. So we'll take another break and then we'll come back. We're going to be talking about, once the game actually came out, what our initial thoughts were of the game and just our reactions from returning to Hyrule and being introduced to Lowrule. So stick around. We'll be right back. So we're not really going back as far as we normally do. We're just going back to 2013, but it is still going to be a major trip. That does feel like a long time ago now that A Link Between Worlds graced our Nintendo 3DSs. And this is, as I was alluding to a little bit before, a game that I was kind of like, of course I'm going to buy it. It's a Zelda game. I'm going to pick it up, but I'm still not sold on this, guys. Like, Reggie, I know you. I get it. This is like your Link to the Past, your favorite game. You're trying to tell me that this is going to be the greatest thing ever, but I wasn't sold on the wall mechanic. I wasn't sold on even the visuals, because when you get it blown up on like a 27-inch monitor from a Nintendo Direct, like the 3DS it's not going to look super hot. But if you're playing it at the actual resolution on a 3DS or a 3DS XL, you'll be pleasantly surprised. So we're literally just going to go all over the place here. I got a bunch of stuff written down, but just to tee things off, I think the thing that people were probably most impressed by, and they better understood why the graphics looked the way that they did, is because in 3D or not, this game runs at 60 frames per second, and you can like swing the sword a million times a second. Like, it is so gratifying. Yeah. Like, even a cut, like cutting grass in this game is a blast, because you're just like, it is so good. But CJ, what, like, when you ended up, you know, getting your copy, of course I'm sure you got it digitally the second it was released. Did you enjoy your return to Hyrule, or were you still somewhat skeptical of seeing this new take on the world that we grew to love so much?
Well, unlike you, I was not skeptical at all. From the moment they announced this game, I was super, super, super excited. I watched all the videos that I could get from E3, all the footage, the pre-release Nintendo Directs that they did. I was very, very excited. And, you know, I think the 60 frames a second thing is part of why I think, you know, the game feels so good to play, like you were saying with the slashing, but everything about it, in combination with the 3D effect. In the Iwata asks, I believe this comes up actually, that the reason it's 60 frames a second is because that looks the best with stereoscopic 3D. And they really pushed hard to get the game running at 60 frames a second continuously, which is fantastic. But I really like the mix of nostalgia this game represents, but also it has so much new to it that it feels like a completely different game. It's like, you know, going someplace or like going back to your hometown after many years have passed. Like, a lot of things have changed, but there's just enough the same that You just get this really overwhelming nostalgic feeling. So I was super happy with the game. I think early on, I was just immediately saying, this is game of the year. There's no doubt in my mind. It's so good. And I still can't believe that they were able to pull this out with such a short development cycle. And yeah, how polished the game is, it's just amazing.
Yeah, have you seen Rogue One, CJ?
Not yet. Tomorrow.
I'm guessing after you see that, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts, but this is kind of like almost the same thing that Rogue One did, is you're kind of like returning to this world and you kind of know, you know, what's going to happen to a certain extent, but there are still some new things to discover. I mean, JJ, I'm kind of curious to see what your thoughts were, because before this, have you ever messed around with A Link to the Past? Like, have you picked it up on like Virtual Console, or was this really your first experience in that world?
Never. I have actually never even touched A Link to the Past.
Okay, so wait, let's get into this for a second. Let's get into this for 1 second, because what? I mean, you live in a world where you could get it on your 3DS, you can get it on your Wii U, you could get it on, you could go down to, you know, your local book off and probably find a copy on the shelf and put it in a Super Famicom. What is keeping you from going to play A Link to the Past?
I really don't know. I have no idea. I was a Sega kid, so I didn't have it when it first came out. And so, I don't know. I never thought to go back. So for me, there was no nostalgia factor. But it looked really fun in the videos, and it's a new Zelda game. So I was down day one. Mm. And I'd have to say that we get free games from Nintendo for, like, you know, podcast purposes and stuff like that. But they usually just go to John and Mark, because they're the ones that are on the list and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so when John got his in the office, like a month before the Japanese one came out, I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. And like the minute I turned it on and it started running around and like swinging my sword, I was like instantly sold. Like mm-hmm. the 60 frames yeah. per second, the reactiveness of the game is just so fun that like it's just fun to just run around and kill things and, like you were saying, cut grass and all that stuff. And like, for me, and like, this kind of plays to my Sega sensibilities a little bit, that like, if the gameplay is just fun and, you know, just kind of like exciting as a moment to moment thing, then like, I am just there. I'm like excited and whatever. And the fact that it was also a Zelda game on top of that, with the amazing music and just all the stuff that you come to expect from a really good Zelda game. Like, for me, there was just no question. And then when I bought it, like, it didn't take me long to just, like, plow through the whole game, get as much as I can, almost everything. Like, I'm not a completionist, but I went through every, like, nook and cranny of that game. And, I would like to go back to, because what I'm worried about is going back to Link to the Past and not having it be as reactive and quick.
Yeah.
And
it's going to be so boring playing that game today after playing Link Between Worlds, like, for real.
Yeah. Yes. So maybe I'll like go back and watch a video.
Yeah, like, I think that'll probably be enough. Really, yeah. I don't think you'd have to go back and play it, honestly.
Is this the right thing to say? Is it would almost be like, and you guys, if you're listening to this, first off, calm down. We're not saying Link to the Past is a bad game. It is in like the top five games of all time, and it is quote unquote a perfect game, as close as you can. It is Super Mario World. It is, you know, Link to the Past. It is Super Mario 64. Like, it is as close. Let me put a Sega game in there. It is what's a really good Sega game? It's Sonic 2. Like, it is like a perfect as you can get with a video game. So, I actually went and looked at some of the kind of like reception from around the world, and you know, Japan kind of gets a reputation of not being a really good place for sales of Zelda games. Like the games don't do as well there as they do in the West or in Europe. So But it did have a really strong, I believe if my memory is correct, it actually sold out the first week. It sold 224,000 copies in week one, which is for Japan, I think that's like just a shit ton of copies.
Yeah, Japan loves its nostalgia, and so that was like a big thing for this one. And I mean, it didn't help that it looked amazing and it was super fun. Yeah, like I was lucky enough to pre-order it and then get a copy day one, and I still have that. I sell like all my games, but I still have that game on the cart, and I probably will never let go of it.
Even I got a copy of the Japanese. That was one of the things I picked up in the last couple of years in my trips to Tokyo, is I made sure I had a copy of this for the Japanese 3DS, just because, I mean, it's not Link to the Past, it's Triforce of the Gods, but it's still like, it's basically like trying, it's saying A Link to the Past 2, which is kind of just cool enough in its own right to have within itself. But where do I want to go with this? So I want to kind of go all over the place, but when I grabbed this, of course, like the day it came out, and that was like my next week, it was constantly whatever I could find time. Like this was my game time, was going into this world. And when you kind of play through it, you have a very similar experience as when you start in Hyrule. Like it's kind of weird. You go to three dungeons, and you even get like the medallions like in different places. Like you don't get the medallions in the dungeons. You get them from people that are kind of associated with the dungeons. But all you know is things are a little bit weird right now. You need to go figure out why this person is, for some reason or another, turning people into paintings, or, you know, turning them into drawings that are then stuck into walls. And that is how Link starts his adventures, sleeping in bed and then getting woken up, and the adventure goes forward. Off when you get to Lorule, right? So you get a very similar experience to Link to the Past, and then once you get to what you would think to be Dark World, you even go back to the main castle and you have an encounter there. Then you are basically forced into Lorule. Changes. You get to meet Hilda, which is the, of course, counterpart to Zelda. Early in the game, you meet. Oh, and this is where I should say, if you do want to play this game and you don't want to be spoiled about the characters, and that's kind of maybe the least important part about this game, you might want to stop listening. But
pause the podcast. Go play 15 hours of Link to the World
for real,
and then come back.
All right, you got 5 seconds before I kind of spoil something. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, so eventually at the end, you figure out, or you get introduced to Rovio, which is someone that just happens to, you know, set up shop in your friggin' house after you get saved from one of the events.
Spies.
What's that?
He's a squatter.
He's a totally, he's, yeah. He's a squatter. He's just like, yo, dude, is it like cool if I set up shop here and I'm gonna give you some sick discounts on my bone arrow and my boomerang?
I love how that whole thing goes down too, because you like at the very beginning of the game, you are out there questing and then you see signs for his shop.
Yeah. It's like, some rabbit looking dude.
All of a sudden your house is transformed into little Ravio bunny head on the roof. You're like, what the heck is going on here? Like, it's amazing. Ravio is one of my favorite characters. Like, he is so ridiculous and funny.
I think like all the characters in the game are, even the ones that we are kind of like Impa, you're revisiting all these characters that you kind of have a certain sense of the people you are, like even Yuga, like you kind of have a pretty good idea of where that is going to be going. But you, and even like there's that character that I can never pronounce the name right, that is 18,000 letters wrong, long. It's I'm going to try this. Sahasraha. Can anyone ever pronounce that name? Like, how are you giving that to an 8-year-old kid to read on my Super Nintendo? It's not fair.
I don't know.
Okay, yeah. We're not even going to try it. But, eventually you get to find out that, like, this game is really, it's about desperation and redemption, right? Like, it sounds like it's kind of deep with that, but we go to find out that Hilda's, she's lying her ass off, man. She's playing us. And so is Rovio. Like, Rovio is the low rule version of Link, and he's kind of a coward. And instead of getting the job done, he is basically saying, all right, well, I'm just going to help out this hero of time, or this hero, and see if he can get the job done. So I'm jumping way too far ahead, but
I do think it's funny, though, that even though he's kind of like a coward, he somehow managed to get all the items.
Yeah, like he already like went into the dungeons and got all the items, or somehow, like, because they're not just regular items. Like, that is the magic hammer. That is the ice rod. It is the fire rod. It's not like just some stuff that you can buy at your local shop.
Can now.
you totally can now. But like you mentioned, there's characters that you kind of reenact it with, and I think maybe the thing that I was worried about the most is that this was just going to be a remake. But even though you still have these items, you have things like the Pegasus boots is a great example. There's a completely different route to obtain those, and same thing with like the flippers. Like, you need to kind of go on a side quest to be able to access those flippers, and then be able to enter one of the temples before you go into Low Rule.
Yeah, and it's just amazing the characters in this game. Like, the Zora princess, who when you first meet her, she's stuck in that fountain. Like, her power has been overwhelming. Like, and even Kakariko Village, it's just, I think they really, really expanded on what Link to the Past was. And a lot of it is characterization, like the little witch character that brings you around on the broom. Like,
and you get bummed out when she disappears.
Yeah.
Like, what happened to her? I gotta go save her. But what about the milk bar? Like, you bring up changes to the town, and like, you could just go hang out in that milk bar and listen to some sweet acoustic versions of your favorite Link to the Past tunes. Thank you.
was it this game that started Nintendo's refocusing on quality music? Because they've been doing this for a while now, where they just like knock it out of the park. Like, I didn't know the 3DS could produce sounds that quality. Like, it's kind of amazing. And then they've continued it in games for the Wii U as well, where just the sound design is fantastic in this game. Like, every little bit, you know, from when you're saving your game on the little weather vanes, like that little click 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 that the weather vanes make, it's just really satisfying. Everything about this game is so satisfying.
Well, the soundtrack itself, I mean, I think they were messing around with the music production for the game, and they were going to try to do, like, you know, Zelda was getting the Zelda franchise. You know, you look at games like Skyward Sword, like those games were becoming, it was becoming regular to have fully orchestrated music for those games. And they even tried to do that, but not to get in a, you know, the 3DS is kind of not as great hardware as it could be discussion. Like, the speakers actually were not good enough on the 3DS to fully articulate the music that they were going to try to produce. So they actually just instead decided to digitize all the music, which was obviously the right call, because I don't know how they could do a better job with it.
The soundtrack for me was just amazing. And like, I could just go into the Milk Bar and listen to those tunes. Like, I just would go there and listen to it because they're just so good. And you're right about, like, you know, maybe it would have been cool to have it orchestrated, but I think there's some sort of goodness, I guess, to having like a digitized soundtrack, especially for a game that's as retro looking and feeling as that. To me, it like really tied it all together.
It fits the atmosphere a lot better. And, you know, I'll say, like, I think for me, just like looking back at what I think of video games and what video games really stand out to me the most in my life, like, a lot of it has to do with music and music that sets the atmosphere. Like, when you make that, there's certain points in the game where certain events happen, then you get thrown back into the world. Like, you get thrown back into Lowrule, and the theme completely changes. And it is like it changes in the sense where, like, when the song starts back up, it's like, dude, it just got real. Like, you got to get going. You got a mission that you must complete. Let's go. Things that you just don't see in, you know, not generic video game soundtracks, but there's totally games out there where you're just like, man, it's another Gears of War soundtrack or something like that. Like, it just sounds like Gears of War, where this sounds like Zelda, but it sounds like the best version of these songs that we've ever heard. Like, JJ, I would love if you could talk a little bit about what you thought of the actual, like, I don't want to say the gimmick, but I guess the mechanic is the right word for it, of going into the wall and then switching between worlds, but also like all the puzzles that could be had from that mechanic.
Yeah, you know, I came into it thinking that it was going to be pretty gimmicky. But I have to say, like, in true Nintendo fashion, like, they really took it and then just explored it from every single avenue you could think of, and they really just did a good job of like taking that little simple mechanic and doing all sorts of fun things with it, like especially in the boss fights. You know, there was the boss with the shield that you would attach yourself to, and then he'd like be like, "Well, where'd he go? Where'd he go?" And then what you would like get up and then come around. And
I'm getting super pumped because I did that. I did that earlier this week, and it's like it's in the old like thieves hideout level in Low Rule, and that is just like, oh my god! Like all the boss battles in this game, I think this might have, and this is where we start getting potentially a little hyperbolic. So just bear with us for a second, but I think, you know, if you compare this to, I know Link's Awakening is like secret best portable Zelda game, you know, best, you know, Zelda game or whatever, but you compare this with the original Zelda, Link to the Past, Link Between Worlds, and you look at those 2D Zelda games, and you can even throw in Spirit Tracks, and you can throw in Minish Cap and the Ages games, but, what is it called? Oracle's games. This has by far the best dungeons. They're not too long. They're challenging, but they're not overly confusing. And the boss battles they're not hard, but they're just so much fun, and they're unique. Even the takes that they have on bosses that come back from previous games, like the boss that's up in Death Mountain is really the snake boss from the first dungeon from Link to the Past. Like, even those battles are cooler because you also have to factor in, like you're saying, JJ, not just the, and I apologize, I'm getting super hyped up about this for a second, but you get not just the wall mechanics, but also, of course, with the 3D and with this game, another big thing was going to be the verticality. So, JJ, man, you're spot on with that stuff. Like, that is, like, you can have so, I wish this almost had like a boss rush mode where you could just go through all those boss battles again.
Agreed. And like, that would be a nice free DLC, Nintendo, if you're listening. And another thing that, you know, when you asked me to be on this podcast, I went back to my 3DS and started playing it. And one thing that kind of surprised me, because I kind of like almost forgot, is that, like, you know, no one really talks about 3D on the 3DS anymore. For the most part, it pretty much may as well not exist. A lot of games are coming out without it even being supported and all that thing. And
I've forgotten
that. Yeah, well, yeah. And so, like, I had kind of forgotten that 3D was kind of an important aspect for this game. So, like, I turned it on and I, like, you know, cranked up the 3D slider. And, you know, I'm going to miss 3D, I think. Because, like, games like this, it was just so cool to, like, really kind of be able to look in like you were, like, kind of observing the Zelda world from the sky. And it, like, really sold that, like, atmosphere. And
well, part of it, too, is the there are areas in dungeons where you can't really see that there's a door underneath a platform. Yeah. And having 3D on helps reveal those secrets, like you try those walls. Right. Where you normally wouldn't. And I think, you know, Link Between Worlds is certainly one of the games that I have to play with 3D on, and there aren't many of those. I think the only other two are Luigi's Mansion, Dark Moon, and Super Mario 3D Land, and this. And, yeah, I also am going to miss the 3D purely for those three games.
That's, man... You know, it really does. I mean, it is the total package. Everything about the 3DS that you liked, Nintendo games that you like, Zelda that you like,
right,
it's all there in one little package with just amazing music, gameplay, graphics.
This game totally justifies the whole console to me. It's like, I mean, if you wanted to get a 3DS today, I mean, you could justify it on this Luigi's Mansion and Super Mario 3D Land. And then if you ever like want to pick up a couple other games, there are some great stuff on the shop. Or you can pick up, you know, if you're in a Pokemon, you can do that. You can do Yo-Kai Watch. There's, you know, some obviously a like continually a just obnoxiously deep library of JRPGs on this thing now. And
yeah,
like the only thing that I'm worried about going forward, and this is like a little bit of a tangent, is like I just hope that Nintendo has an outlet. And maybe it's on the Switch. I don't know if they can just do it like they kind of like mimic the DS stuff on Wii U, but making sure that we can continue to play this game going forward. Otherwise, it's like winter's coming, folks. We got to stock up on these 3DSs and make sure, like, I literally bought two of those $99 3DSs, one for the closet and one to keep playing on, because I need to play this game in 15, 20 years. I think this is my new... like what Link to the Past was, my yearly playthrough. I'd play through it like almost every Christmas. I'd play through either Link to the Past or Ocarina of Time like I did last year. And this is now going to take place of Link to the Past. It is so, it is getting into that. It's like sitting next to the fire in your childhood home where your mom's making you cookies and you're just drinking, like, you got that sick, like 2 liter of Coke to yourself, dude. You're just like having the time of your friggin' life. And that's what this game is for me. But
I think you're right, but I wonder if it's also, if it's not just the similarities to the old Zelda, but it's a lot of the new things that they did, like renting the items, being able to get basically all the items from the beginning,
and the story's way better. Like, it actually
really good.
Yeah, the story, it has, like you said, it's great characters, but it's also like a sense of duty. And even like we'll talk about the end in a little bit. So again, like, you know, you get the hell out of here. You don't want to hear about it. But like, I teared up at the end of this game. Like, I thought it was super charming how they wrapped this thing up. And I cannot stop gushing about this game. I'm going to keep going all over the place, but I want you guys to step on me and bring stuff up if you'd like to. So crosstalk is okay on this show. I'm just saying.
Sure.
So if I could say one bad thing about this game, it's getting the Master Sword. Because those ghosts can piss my ass.
It's easily the best moment of the game, though.
It's the best moment, but it took me forever. And every playthrough I do of this game, it takes me, I get, you know, they play the, the cup game of shuffling those ghosts around. And for some reason, I cannot see when they overlap each other. I lose the ghost and I keep going through the wrong friggin' log thing. And but you're right. If you can get past that, you obtain the Master Sword. You see the animals, like, you know, running away as you approach, and those medallions go up in the air, and it's magic.
Yeah, I mean that is like one of those goosebumps moments where you just like have to stop and appreciate just how masterful it's all being done. And like, it probably was one of my top moments of any game that year, easily, actually.
I just don't know. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
It's just too good.
CJ, is this the best game ever?
I don't know about ever. It's pretty close, though. Like, it's a pretty damn good Zelda game. Like, when I look at the Zelda canon, I think this one might be at the top, like, just in terms of pure joy. Like, there's no filler here. And
there's no 8 hours in the beginning so you can, like, you know, go fishing and, you know, tackle some whatever the hell those things were.
Right. Yeah. And I think you sort of hit on something with the short dungeons. I think that's part of it. Like, they don't overstay their welcome. Yeah. They start with a core concept, usually with one of the tools that you get throughout the game or you rent from Ravio. And they build upon that and use the wall merging mechanic to do it up until the boss fight. And you know, that's what I think makes this game so great, is just the pace of everything. And Not to mention the Mai hunt, which I love.
I was just gonna say that. I was literally looking at it written down on my sheet. Is like it's the Mai's, but it's also like if you ever want to just take a break from the dungeons, like there's tons of stuff that you can go do. There's all these side quests. Yes. There's all the little caves with, you know, rupees are meaningless in this game once you get to low roll because you'll have enough money to not rent this stuff, but you have the ability to then buy those items. That's not a hurdle, but like you said, the Mai's or even potentially the best track in the game is the track for the mini games. Baseball game, which is, you know,
that's weird.
It's Brian Davis's like secret favorite mini game of all time, and it's just great. I apologize for stepping on your toes, but this is me on no sleep from last night, but I'm so pumped to even after we finish talking, like I'm going back to this game. I was going to try to play through all of it again for this recording, but I'm like, dude, that's not how you're, don't do it. Just like savor this thing, man, and enjoy it, because I played a bunch of Call of Duty first person shooters and Hitman's the last couple months. I just need to relax with The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
Going back to Mai hunt real quick though. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
You have 100 of those Mai babies that you have to find.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, there's this sense of joy every time you find one,
yeah,
or every time you hear that little squeak.
Yeah.
Like, oh, one of them is around here. I got to find. And you know, I'm not a completionist either, but I got all 100 of those Mai's.
Dude.
Yeah.
And I love the reward that you get for them. The powering up of the tools. Like it is really worth doing.
I think like the whole game is, and you compare it to most modern Zelda games, especially like the console ones, where the console Zeldas always have a problem fleshing out the world in a way that's fun and provides a meaningful distraction from the main quest.
Mm.
Like, you know, you'll find a lot of times where you'll like go into a cave and, you know, at the end it's just going to be like a rupee and you're like, what was this for even? It wasn't very fun. It was too long, blah, blah, blah. But with A Link Between Worlds, I always felt like, and you know, maybe it was because the dungeons were shorter. So everything was kind of comparable in length and the amount of time you needed to dedicate. So, like, it kind of felt like a true open-world Zelda where whatever you were doing was working towards some sort of goal, and it was always fun.
Mm.
And you could always feel like, you know, you didn't have to go from dungeon to dungeon. You could just do other things and still get some sort of meaningful reward out of it, like the Mai's and upgrading your weapons, or just having, like, fun dungeons to find, and mini-dungeons, I should say. And, sorry for all the baby crying. And and for me, like, that's kind of what puts this Zelda over so many others that have come before it. is because it's just so perfectly tuned that there's never a moment where you are bored.
And it's like, I know I actually flipped mine open real quick to kind of look at something. I go back to like concerns of what I had back when I originally saw this, and the magic meter was one of them. It's like, what are you talking about? I should just be able to find bombs and find arrows and use them that way. But the balance of this game and how you balance that magic meter for not just your items, but your ability to, you know, go into the walls and having to like, you know, slide along the walls, you know, come out of it, you know, go onto a platform or like a cube and then ride that up to a platform and then come off of that. It is just like, this is a game that really like only Nintendo can make, right? Like they're the company that can balance this stuff so well, and they see all these little things that, you know, I think some companies might otherwise overlook. And
well, I think also I think the important thing there is that they kept the things that were important, being, you know, the setting and the map and for nostalgia reasons, but they changed a lot of things that may be cumbersome, you know, like item management is simplified a
wallet
lot
size
here. And then, you know, the Mai hunt, going back to that, because I love that, they give you that map and they like tell you how many you're missing, which is like in a normal game, they probably like wouldn't do that. They just sort of throw you in there and do whatever. But to me, that encouraged me to clear all of those areas because of how many were missing. And I love that they weren't afraid to change the right things, right?
Yeah.
Like the renting the items and the Mai hunt and the magic meter and
fast
all this
travel.
Stuff that fast travel. Yeah, that seems like it would totally break everything you love about Zelda, but it actually enhances it.
And then they made great use of not just the 3D on the hardware, but you know the map that you have below, you can easily flip between Hyrule and Hyrule, so you can see when you got to get to some dungeons in Hyrule, you got to jump back, and that's what is so much better, the jumping back and forth between worlds, because you remember in Link to the Past, like you have the mirror, but then you also only have two areas, or maybe there might be three areas unless you pick up a stone and you actually have, you know, one of those puddles that gets you back into Dark World. You need to be restricted by stuff like that. Where in Link Between Worlds, like all you got to do is find a crack in the wall, which are all over the place, and you can jump back and forth between the worlds. And even just like that trippy ass, like who was passing around the good stuff at Nintendo when they were putting together that screen to just show that transition and the cool music, and even like when you're against the wall, like the music is kind of muted. Like it's all these small touches that, again, it's just, maybe we can just talk about right now. This is better than A Link to the Past.
I agree completely.
I can't comment, but I'm sure you're correct.
Well, I understand the reasoning, like in context of history, and I know we should have that concern since this is, you know, somewhat of a retro video game podcast, but like today, and like it will still be cool, I'm sure, when the Switch comes out and Nintendo asks me to give them another $8 for A Link to the Past, you know, I might do it at when I get that itch again. But for right now, like this scratches not only that itch, but it scratches some huge other itch that I didn't know existed until I played through this game. And I just, again, like I said, I can't wait to just stop talking to you guys to play it some more and just go through a dungeon every single night and look for the Mayamis and, you know, find some more heart pieces and build up those heart containers. And it's just so damn good.
I really hope they go back and remake A Link to the Past with this engine and then sell them both for the Switch.
Yeah, well, I mean,
yeah, that would be great.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I kind of wanted to bring up is, all right, so they did this. Can they do, and we're not talking Yoshi's Island, but can they do Super Mario World 2, or is that just New Super Mario, what was it, New Super Mario Brothers U? Because, like, say if we got to go back to like the Dino Land and we have that same kind of map, and we don't have to deal with the Wawa and the bad music of New Super Mario Brothers.
I think sadly that is New Super Mario Brothers. I think that ship has sailed. But you know, the fact that Nintendo did this with Link to the Past makes me hopeful that maybe they would revisit some other games that they haven't touched in a long time. Like, Metroid and Super Mario Brothers USA /2.
Dude.
Like,
yes. Thank you.
God, when are we getting fantastic.
Like, you know, Super Mario 3D World as close as we've gotten so far, but it's still just like a 3D Mario with, like, you know, the different characters. Like, I want Toad. I want you know, all that stuff.
Yes. Well,
from Super Mario USA. I want the eggs and picking up beets and
Birdos
and Birdos and all that thing. I just want it all back. I wonder if there's like a licensing reason they can't use all that stuff. Makes me wonder.
Hmm.
Well, they've used some of it in the past, like,
well, yeah,
in the, using the characters in other games and whatnot. Birdo's been in other games.
Right.
So I'm holding out hope. I'm not holding my breath, but I am holding out hope that maybe they'd do something like that.
Well, maybe they're just waiting for the right, you know, the team to come up with the right concept, because, you know, that maybe one of the more surprising things for me when I look at the history of this game is for Miyamoto himself to suggest making a sequel to Link to the Past, because he is a creator, has always been, seemingly, I mean, New Super Mario Brothers is something that's a little bit different, but always trying to do something completely different. Like, even with, you look at Super Mario Sunshine, you look at the production of Glowing, I almost want to say Majora's Mask, but I guess he didn't really have much of a take on that. But, like, always trying to do something that was completely different than what came before it, almost for the just sake of being different more than anything.
But always anchored by some unique mechanic. Never just, oh, we're going to do another one of these, and we have to come up with a concept to do another one. It's
right.
It's usually like the concept comes first, or the new mechanic comes first, and then they build a game around it.
Except for Star Fox, that didn't work out.
Well, yeah.
God. Anyways,
treasure, give Star Fox the treasure, goddammit.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's actually, that wouldn't be a bad idea. So I want to talk about the ending real quick before we wrap up. And you guys keep in mind, like, even if we did like somewhat spoil some of this stuff for you, we didn't really talk about any of the dungeons, because I think like those just need to be experience. We didn't talk about all the little touches of Hyrule and Hyrule and the awesome job that they did mirroring those two and paying homage to A Link to the Past while still having its own spin for Link Between Worlds. But as I mentioned before, you know, Hilda is Zelda's counterpart. Rovio, we find out right at the end, is Link's counterpart. And I mentioned before, like, this game being a story of desperation and redemption, and really, like, Hyrule is like is not doing super well. Like, the world is falling into darkness. It is literally is getting torn apart by earthquakes, and Hilda basically has the excuse that she's the princess. She's going to do whatever it takes to protect her people. So they find this crack. They find their way over to Hyrule. And in this process, they learn, all right, all we got to do is take their Triforce. We can bring it back over here. We can make a wish and we'll be good to go. It will restore our world. And in this desperate attempt, you know, instead of their Link doing this, they decide to wake up Ganon, because of course that's what you would do. And of course it does not work out perfectly well, and Ganon is basically deciding to screw both of them. And you end up defeating Ganon in, again, one of probably like an, such a good boss fight, like such an awesome badass boss fight with, you know, you still have your golden arrow, you still are using your wall mechanics, and you get to fight, of course, multiple forms of Ganon. But at the end, you go, you save Zelda, and they basically confess. They say, like, yeah, this is our bad. Like, we did what we thought was the right thing to do for our people. And Hilda says, nope, we're not gonna screw you guys. We're gonna send you home. They get sent back to Hyrule. The crack disappears or stops working. And then Zelda's like, no, Link, you know what we should do? We should save their asses anyways. And they go up to the Triforce. They make a wish. And behind this is just incredible. Like, absolutely, if you haven't played this game in a while, like, go just watch that ending again. And, like, see how, like, the music just is so emotional. And you get to see that build up as they more or less make a wish to restore the Triforce of Lorule. So it, like, that crack opens back up, it explodes, and they get their Triforce. It restores the world of Lorule. Thank you. And credit scene, you get to hear some awesome music, and we all get to go on, and the hero gets to take a little bit of a rest. Maybe the best ending. I know I'm talking a lot, but the ending of Wind Waker in that final boss battle is pretty badass. But this is up there. I know, JJ, I don't know if you have any thoughts on like kind of revisiting this ending and you know the emotions that it brings up.
You know, well, for me, it just was like Zelda endings are pretty hit and miss, I feel. And this was definitely one of the best ones. Like, I didn't really see the twist at the end coming so much.
Me neither, at all.
So I was, yeah. It was surprising, but not in like a weird what why kind of way, you know? It was the perfect ending to almost pretty much perfect game. So,
yeah, the thing that struck me most about the ending and the whole build up and the whole Hilda and Ravio thing is that, you know, instead of just this evil being, you have good people who are trying to do a good thing or what they think is a good thing being the baddies. You know, and then at the end, they realize the error of their ways, and you get to save the world.
It is a somewhat common sci-fi trope. Like, even there's an episode of Stargate SG-1 of like the almost not the exact same story, but it's a similar story of parallel worlds and parallel versions of ourselves thinking they're doing the right thing.
Fringe.
Dude, you and me are the biggest Fringe fans on this planet. Absolutely. But it still works because it's like it's Zelda, man, and it's just like it really no matter works. What, it's an absolute blast. And I love these characters, I love these worlds, and maybe more than anything, I was just super bummed that it was over.
Yeah,
like I wanted a reason to go back and
hero mode.
Yeah, seriously.
Hero mode, absolutely.
No, don't do hero mode.
Oh no, I mean, you
could, but yeah.
Yeah, you totally could, but what it is not is Triforce Heroes. That is not the continuation of this game that we deserved. That game is it's not fun.
Don't say it. Yeah.
There's some good. I mean, if you got the right people.
Exactly. It's if you have the right people.
If you live in Japan,
sitting across from you.
If they're next to you. But if you're living in America, where everyone's a dick, and whenever you play online, they're just buttheads. They either don't know what they're doing, or they're doing things to screw you over. You're like, I cannot trust people. You know what I like? I like artificial intelligence. I like programmed characters that do what they're supposed to do, and I can trust them. I can't trust humans. I can trust computers.
Honestly, that should have been like a download only title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For like $15.
What if we got like Link Between Worlds 2? Like, what if we just said, let's 2D, not 2D, it would obviously be polygonal, but let's go top down like Ocarina of Time or something like that. And I would have loved it. And also, I forgot that this actually did allude to, if you look in Link's house, Majora's Mask is in there, so they kind of teased Majora's Mask 3D, which was super cool, and I'm very happy they did that because I got to love that game for the first time on 3DS.
I want them to make a new game with this engine at some point. I wonder what the portable team is working on right now.
Yeah, where do you think they go from here? Because they had Spirit Tracks and Phantom Hourglass, and then they pivoted to do this. Like, what's next for portable Zelda, or is there portable Zelda since we're about to have the Switch?
Okay, this is we're either going to get one or two things. We're either going to get the dark timeline or the light timeline. The dark timeline is Legend of Zelda Run, which is going to be $20, and it will include three different games, and it will be the sequel. And the worst part is it will be the sequel to Zelda 2 that all those crazy people like John Riccardi actually want, and it will be bad. It will be on an iPhone. Yeah,
no, that is not true. It will be good.
I think they could do a good one of that.
Yeah. I wish they just called it Zelda 2 Run. And they just kept that same art style and everything.
Why would you wish that? Why would you want? I want like a real Zelda 2. Because
that's the Zelda 2 you guys deserve. And also, I think the right idea, and I don't know if it's possible, but think about what they could do with The Legend of Zelda Maker and just like use this visual style and Link to the Past. Like just skip over the 8-bit version and let people make dungeons. That would be cool.
It would be cool. It'd be hard, I think.
Super duper hard, yeah. For sure.
But I would love to be able to do that. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, they've been working on the upcoming Breath of the Wild for the last like dozen years. So eventually, once that's done, I'm sure they'll be able to focus on another game. But it's like weird because we're not going to get portable Zeldas anymore, right? We're just going to get the next Zelda game. We don't, you know what I mean?
Well, I think, you know, there's still going to be two different Zelda teams, I think. I hope.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
But, yeah, I guess there won't be a... I mean, well, for all intents and purposes, there is still the DS as their portable console.
True.
And they still are, like, holding on to that. So there may still be, like, a portable... You know, that maybe there is a 4DS in the future.
That would be cool.
Seems weird, but I mean, the way Nintendo talks publicly about it, it makes it seem like they're not pinning everything on the Switch. But I hope, I really do hope that we still get to see these kind of smaller games from them, especially in this franchise, which like. As much as I like the mainline Zeldas, I can't go 5, 6, 7 years between each one. So
or 60 hours. Like, you know, yeah. It is nice to have a nice, super tight 15-hour adventure.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll find out relatively soon because within the next year, we should have a really good idea of where Nintendo is going to be dedicating its resources. And, you know, JJ, like you said, you know, 3DS actually has like, kind of a ridiculous lineup right now for 2017. Like we're starting, at least here in the States, we're starting the year with Dragon Quest VIII, which is nuts. I don't know if that's going to be a huge release for them, but it is like a big release for me.
And next year in Japan, apparently the Dragon Quest XI.
Exactly.
There's that new Pikmin they announced, a few other things. The 3DS isn't going anywhere. I mean...
Especially if they can keep selling them for... No, hell no. And like, again, I don't know if this is going to happen in Japan as well, but you know, for the holiday season, they sold, like 3DSs are sold out everywhere. Like you can't buy them in a store right now in North America. Like they're gone. And it's not just crazy. The $99 3DSs that we had at Black Friday time. Like you can't get a 2DS or a 3DS. Like I was like doing some holiday shopping the last couple days and like just poking around in Targets and Best Buys. Shit, yeah. I really want to play more Zelda right now. and I could not find them anywhere and they're sold out on every online retailer too. So they must be looking at that and saying like, well, either A, we don't need to drop this thing to $99 like we did. Maybe we should have done $149 or hey guys, we got plenty of legs. People still want to play Pokemon games.
Yeah, I mean, it's priced for kids and, you know, new Pokemon Go craze got everybody back into Pokemon. It's going to be hard to find.
Well, yeah. I will take back. I do give the 3DS a hard time. It's just because I know its potential and I know how good the games are on that system. I just wish we still need one more revision. We still need one more revision of the 3DS that has like 15-hour battery life, has like screens that don't suck and that have like badass speakers on them. And I'll buy three of them.
3DS Pro. Let's do it.
Yeah. Give me a 3DS Pro.
Hell right? Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. But I do like, I do like owning, like I got a black and a white new 3DS small and those are awesome. And they're for $99. You can't do much better, but I've taken up too much of your guys' time. And I think, you know, the audience out there is probably dying to play some more Zelda. So I think this would be a good time to wrap things up. And again, I think if we kind of look at the whole library of Zelda games, or I mean, just to confirm, CJ, you believe this to be the best Zelda game of all time?
Yes. I'm going to go out on a limb and say yes, it is.
And JJ has not played original Link to the Past. I don't think you need to, though. You probably still should if you get the itch, but like you play all the Zelda games. You play, like you said, you play all the mainline stuff. Where does this stand for you in the Zelda library?
Best of the post Ocarina Zeldas, definitely. Mm. Not including Ocarina. Ocarina for me is still number one, but it's definitely up there. And Toma agrees.
Well, as we got the votes in, and it is confirmed. And again, it just shows. Oddly enough, the 3DS has become kind of like the best Zelda platform where you can play 1, 2, Link to the Past, the best version of Ocarina, best version of Majora's, and Link Between Worlds. It's a nice little thing to, you know, store in your pocket if you want to go on some adventures and save Zelda one more time.
Great airplane game.
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. Like I said, I want to stop talking to you guys so I can continue to play it. But, for everyone else out there, I do want to let you know that as you get towards the end of the year, it's also a great time to, you know, check out who you're following on Twitter. You can add two great people on there. First, you can add CJ at Super Pac, like the, somewhat mediocre Pac-Man sequel.
That's right. It's extremely mediocre.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's okay. I mean, he gets big.
So yeah, that's not a good game.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not a good game. And of course, you can find CJ on the Player One podcast every single Sunday night live on YouTube, and then it eventually makes its way out on Monday/Tuesday, depending on where you live, on iTunes. And you guys had a very spirited. I got to check in on that very spirited Mario Run discussion, which you guys disagreed.
I'm really liking it for what it's worth.
Yeah. Kevin, have you played much of it?
I did. I played the free 3 levels and I said, oh, wow. You guys are not getting $10 from me.
Well, here's the thing though. Play the free 3 levels and try to get all of the different colors of coin. And I think you will be turned from that, if you enjoy your Mario platformers with a good amount of challenge, then those black coins are gonna really mess with you.
You know what it made me do is I restarted a new game of New Super Mario 2.
Okay, yeah,
because it actually is a pretty good game. But this Mario Run, maybe I'll get it on a sale or something like that. It's just not, I'm not a mobile game person anyways. So I have a 3DS right next to me. I'll just play regular Mario, and for the price is a little bit of a bear for me. Sorry, but I like.
It's only $10.
It's only 10 bucks.
It's not that much.
Yeah, but $10 can get me like Doom on the PC this weekend on Steam sale.
Well, that's unfair.
No, I'm in the middle of it.
No, I'm just kidding. You should absolutely, especially since you built a new computer, man. That is going to be like, oh my God, it's so good. I'm playing Link Between Worlds. Give me a break. So, and also you can find JJ, of course, at SPRSK. On Twitter, and I'm sure you guys talked about it on 8-4 Play this week, the new Super Mario Run.
Yes, we did.
And you have a friend of the show, Steve Lin, in there too, right?
Yes, we... Oh, yeah. Oh, man, you guys got to listen. He has some...
I can't wait.
...incredible stories to tell about all sorts of things that I didn't even... I mean, I consider myself knowledgeable about gaming history, but he had some stuff that I just never heard of. Yeah. So fun to just listen to him talk, and definitely listen to this week's podcast. It'll be coming out in, like... 10 hours.
Perfect. And also the bringing up Steve Lin, I'm very happy that I got in touch with Brandon Sheffield about coming back on the show to talk about the music of the PC Engine and the TurboGrafx-16, and Steve Lin will absolutely be on that. So yeah, check out 8-4 Play. Check out those guys on Twitter. And until next time, Toma wants to go play some video games with Dad. So we're going to let him go to it.
He's hot.
And we will see you guys next time. Have a great holidays and a great finish to 2016. Take care.